I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
Every single day I come in here, I think about winning. You know, I don't do this year round to come in and not make the playoffs. I'm sick of that shit, and I want to keep winning.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am Jimmy Durkin, joined by Vic Tafer and Ted Nguyen. Tashawn Reed enjoying the bye week. I believe he is somewhere eating a medium rare steak, drinking a beer. So hope he's enjoying that. But all right, guys, we finally made it to the bye week. Jeez, took the week 13 to get to the bye. That's a late bye, and you know, if you're the Raiders, it's probably been a grind to just to get to this point. You have a midseason coaching change. You go 2-2, win the first two under Antonio Pierce. Obviously, the schedule helped you there with those two games against the New York teams in the last 2 weeks. Dolphins and Chiefs, they lost pretty soundly to the Chiefs despite taking that 14-0 lead. Let's talk a little bit about that game. I don't think any of us felt comfortable, right, when they were ahead 14-0.
It was surprising that they started out so well. But, I mean, we've seen this so many times with the Chiefs where the Raiders start really well. And then they kind of implode like last season. I forgot what the score was, but in Arrowhead, they came out and
was it a 20?
I think it was a 20-point lead.
I thought it was 17, but yeah.
Yeah, it might have been a 17-point lead, but it evaporated quickly and they ended up losing the game late in the game. This one, the Chiefs kind of took control a little bit more early than that, and it wasn't quite dramatic at the end. But I mean, with this Chiefs team, you know, you just can never feel safe with Patrick Mahomes on the other sideline. And kudos to the Raiders. I think they came in with a good opening script and offense, but they just couldn't keep it going throughout the game. I mean, this Chiefs defense is a legit defense, and they took control after those first few drives.
That was exciting. I mean, fans definitely got a chance to see the best of Aiden O'Connell, and the offense definitely was clicking early, and the defense had some stops. So I think if you're a home Raider fan, it was probably a great moment for you. And I'm sure Raider fans also at that moment knew that, you know what, this is not gonna last. But the Chiefs, I think, had a little hangover from their game against the Eagles. But yeah, I got to focus on the positives. I think you look at, I mentioned the offense looked sharp early on. Defense made some plays. I think Max Crosby obviously wasn't himself. He wasn't fully 100%, and he still played pretty well. So those kind of games, I think you look at the one against the Dolphins, against the Chiefs. You're playing better teams. I think it would have been a lot to ask for a win. So I know those are moral victories, but I think it's just the steps. You're trying to see if Aiden O'Connell is actually your guy, or has a chance to be your guy at quarterback. So I think he took some positive steps in that direction, but still some question marks as well.
You know, coming into this two-game stretch before it happened, I know it feels like it sucks because you're on a two-game losing streak, but I mean, before this two-game stretch with the Dolphins and Chiefs, I mean, not a lot of people expected the Raiders to beat these teams, and at least in these games, they were competitive. The Dolphins game was a one-possession game for most of it and in the end, and against the Chiefs, you came up to a 14-point lead. So they were competitive in this games at least, and I think that still says something about the Antonio Pierce effect and, you know, losing Josh McDaniels effect.
Yeah, I knew we got to see Josh Jacobs get loose, have that 63-yard run. Obviously, not a whole lot else other than that, but when you look at last year, I think that was the biggest difference between Josh Jacobs, who was good in the seasons before, and the Josh Jacobs, who was a first-team All-Pro last year, is if he kind of finally flashed that home run hitting ability last season. You know, we saw the walk-off in Seattle, and so it was nice to kind of see one of those big runs out of Jacobs, even if it wasn't a game where they fully sustained that running attack.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier it's been like kind of a tough year for a lot of players. A lot's going on. I think for Josh Jacobs as well. I mean, look at his year. He didn't get the extension he wanted and probably earned. O-line's taking a step back. And he has this, you know, quarterback mess and teams are stacking the box. So nice moment for him. I think you saw, you always see his ability. He's definitely top running back in this league. But I'm sure he's been through a lot and been frustrated, I'm sure, at times. But a nice moment for him, and hopefully can build off this and finish the year strong.
We talked about it in this pod before that this offensive line is probably a better zone blocking team than gap blocking team, just because they're a little more athletic and they're not quite physical. And I felt like in this game, they really committed to running a lot of outside zone. And even on that big touchdown run, it was an outside zone run. Aiden O'Connell did a good job of checking into the run. I think he just changed the side of the run because of the safety rotation. And then, they had a nice combo block from Colton Miller and Michael Mayer on a defensive end to the secondary support, and they created a little crease for him, and Josh Jacobs broke through. So it is something to build on, I think. It's just committing to this zone type of run for the rest of the season.
Let's talk about Max Crosby. The fact that he played is pretty insane. I think we all kind of all last week like didn't really take seriously the fact that he was on the injury report, that he wasn't practicing, just like because we had no real doubts that he would play, just because that's who he is. He plays through whatever. I mean, we saw what happened. I think was it his first game of his rookie year or early in his rookie year, back in the Hard Knock season, where he breaks his hand in that preseason game and goes and tapes it back up and plays. And then, you know, then he gets it fixed after the game and doesn't miss a season opener. But finding out more about the fact that, I mean, he had what, bacteria infection in there. He was in the hospital on Thursday night. For him to go from a hospital bed to playing, what, 80%, 85% of the snaps against the Chiefs, getting a sack against Patrick Mahomes. We know how good this guy is. I mean, he is one of the premier defensive players in the league. It just goes to show just how tough he is. I mean, we've always known that, but what another just story to kind of put in the cap of how tough and how good of a player Max Crosby is.
Yeah, I mean, he's nuts. He'll tell that himself. He's crazy. And so, yeah, I think we're all definitely taken for granted at times. I do have a small voice in my head wondering, maybe he shouldn't have played. I mean, maybe for the Raiders, you're like, you know what? If you're like in a hospital and you missed practice all week, and I mean, there's nothing to prove. And obviously, and this is a game where, you know, whatever, you can try and win, or maybe you realize you're probably not going to win it. But I think at some point, maybe keeping Max from himself and like maybe helping him out a little bit, maybe, you know, long term, maybe this is the week you want to take off. Maybe we can use the 2 weeks for this week and the bye week to really get you like a fresh start. So, again, he wants to play. I get that. But it kind of shows you, again, like the players definitely have a lot of control right now. I think I wonder other organizations may have, you know what, just take the week off and we'll see how it goes. And let's think big picture. But, again, he's a maniac, and he owns that. And I think that's part of what makes him special. So, yeah, tip your cap to him. And in the hospital Thursday and sacking Mahomes on Sunday.
Yeah, I was reading about the infection he had, and people have died from this infection. So it's crazy that he, you know, one was able to heal back in time. And, you know, I don't know what the risk factor of a further infection of, you know, playing on a football field is, but this was a life-threatening ordeal he went through, and he still came out and played against the Chiefs and had a sack in this game too. So pretty crazy. And yeah, I agree that probably it wouldn't be too happy about listening to this, but you know, sometimes you got to save a player from himself, and maybe this was an unnecessary risk, but still hats off to him.
He was pissed off when he took him out of the game, down 14 points late and the game was over. He took him out and he threw a tantrum. So obviously he would have been crazily mad if he didn't have a chance to play, but still, I think he's phenomenal. He's great. He's definitely proven he will do whatever it takes to help his team. But maybe you're like, you know what? Let's take this one off. Let's just see how it goes. Take the 2 weeks off and let's get a full health.
He's up to 11 and a half sacks this year, and yeah, there's still 5 games left. So he's going to probably break his personal best by a lot this season. Do you guys think he has a chance of defensive player of the year? I mean, I know Deron Bland from the Cowboys is making
Ryan he's Bland. Probably elite.
5 touchdowns, man. He's got more. He's got more touchdowns than Davante Adams.
I hate to be Scrooge at Christmas time, but Deron Bland's got no shot at winning the Player of the Year.
A lot of people are talking about it.
MVP is a quarterback.
Deron Bland.
MVP is a quarterback award. Defensive Player of the Year is a pass rusher award.
There's so many great ones. I mean, you look at the Myles Garrett. I mean, pretty much they're 7-4 because of him. And TJ Watt's doing great things. Crosby, I just don't. Aaron Donald's still, I mean, still incredible. So I just can't imagine Durant Bland is going to get any kind of serious run at MVP. God bless him.
I think the biggest thing that's going to hurt Crosby is so much of these awards are narrative based, and you pick a guy on a team that is a difference making defense. And obviously this Raiders defense has been a lot better than we expected, but I think Myles Garrett is probably, you know, going to be the favorite just because of we're looking at a Browns defense that, I mean, Joe Flacco might start a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. I mean,
he's elite.
You look at when Khalil Mack won Defensive Player of the Year. That was the year they go 12-4. And his numbers had been better the year before. You know, he had 15 and a half sacks back in 2015, the year before. You know, he only had 11 sacks in 2016, but he had, you know, the game-breaking plays. And he was on a defense that it wasn't even great, but, you know, it was on a team that had the narrative going for it, going 12-4, making the playoffs for first time in all those years. And so I think the narrative is going to hurt him. But, I mean, if you talk about production, I mean, he definitely should be in that conversation. He should get votes. Well, from there, we'll transition over to a player who's no longer with the Raiders. Marcus Peters released. Vic, you wrote on Sunday night that it was imminent and even included the additional nugget that they were going to release him earlier this year. And I don't know, when he talked his way out of it, I don't know.
Yeah, there were injuries. I think I'm not sure exactly the date, but I know he was coming in to be released that day. And I don't know if that was when Amik got hurt or maybe it was in Hobbs, but a few, like maybe a month ago, I want to say. A couple of those guys had some problems. They realized that maybe they'll hold off. And obviously, you know, he's a veteran guy. I want to give him as many chances as you can. You're paying the guy, you know, $3 million. But I just think there are too many examples this year of plays where you could, you know, hate to question the guy's effort, but maybe he wasn't giving it his all 100% on some of these plays. And I mean, he's always been known as kind of a shaky tackler. But this year, it really took a steep dip where he was pretty bad. And so I think at this point you're 5-7. You got some young guys you probably want to see. Jacorian Bennett was not inactive last week. So, you know, he's a guy you should probably evaluate and get some snaps in. And Meek's been playing pretty well. So he's kind of earned a spot there. And you got, there's a chance to get FaceTime back after the bye. So another guy you might want to see play some snaps. But it just made sense, I think, in terms of, yeah, it just wasn't the right fit.
You have this group of younger corners that you want to get some reps to as well. But I agree. I think Peters has always been a pretty bad tackler, but you could live with him being a bad tackler. You could live with him missing a coverage snap here and there because of his gambles. But when he has the athletic ability to take advantage of those gambles, it was okay and worth it to have him on the field. But now that he is a little bit older and he was never really a fast corner to start with, you know, there's just all the negatives outweigh the positives, which isn't very much at all. I mean, he had his best moment as a Raider was that interception pick six against the Lions, but he just hasn't made a lot of plays and he's made a lot of bad plays throughout the season. So it makes sense that the Raiders cut him and he hasn't been signed yet and he wasn't claimed on waivers and he's not signed yet in the league that, you know, really needs cornerbacks and cornerback depth. So, you know, I think maybe he gets a shot later on if some injuries happen, but I just have a hard time believing that a team's going to look at the tape and decide they need to bring him in for help.
Yeah. I mean, he had the one pick six, but he probably should have had two or three. I mean, I know there was at least one other like blatant drop. And I think there was a couple other opportunities. I mean, hey, he has three pick sixes. Ted's putting him in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation with our guy, Deron Bland. But cornerbacks who aren't good tacklers can still be really good cornerbacks. I mean, Deion Sanders was a terrible tackler. I mean, he can go watch some of the highlights of him making attempts to tackle. But, you know, the early part of Peter's career, I mean, he made enough plays to make up for it. And I think, you know, one of the reasons they brought him in, you know, Vic, you talked about it when they signed him, you know, was to kind of bring an edge, bring a nastiness to the cornerback group, not a nastiness in terms of like physicality on the field, but just kind of bring an edge to that cornerback group. And I think this is a move that has Antonio Pierce's fingerprints on it, because when you're a, you know, big, tough former middle linebacker trying to establish a culture here now that you're taking over, you're not going to handle having a guy out there who's not given that kind of effort. And so I think that's why you saw him get benched in this game, you know, have some words with Antonio Pierce. And that's why you saw, you know, by the next morning he was gone.
It's also always in the NFL, there's always a money element to it. And I think he was due to make $1.5 million in playing time incentives. I think he's getting pretty close to that first clause. So if you are not sold on a guy and you do want to like see some younger guys play, why not save $1.5 million at the same time? And you just spend a lot of money on the coaching firing, and the money's been, you know, Chandler Jones has been, money's been pouring out of the franchise the last year. So might as well take a little chunk of change back. I will say this though, I think I don't think Peters was bad overall. I thought he had bad plays and bad stretches, but he probably still was, you know, one of their better cornerbacks. I'm not sure the Raiders are better now. They've gotten rid of Marcus Peters, I think. And maybe he did help in terms of, you know, Meek's development this year. And we saw Trayvon Merrick's taking a jump up. So maybe, I don't want to totally crap over Marcus Peters. I think he had a little bit of a positive effect. But wasn't a terrible player. Just there are, you know, the examples of him of not giving maximum effort definitely were very clear and very there were some big plays over the year that he could have made. So, just I think a lot of things play a part in his departure, but I think if you look at it, I think it makes sense.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, well, let's look ahead to the final five games on the season, on the schedule. We got the week off to enjoy it. Raiders fans, enjoy your Sunday. Take a nice stroll, hopefully. Good weather wherever you're at. And then they'll get back at it a week from then. Vikings, then a quick turnaround to a Thursday night game against the Chargers. Chiefs, Colts, Broncos is how they finish. We painted this picture a while ago of these next five games being the tough ones, and then the last two, Colts and Broncos, being ones that are going to be a little bit easier. I mean, the Colts, the season ended right now, would be in the playoffs. The Broncos are obviously surging, one of the hottest teams in the league. Last five games from the schedule, not easy. I mean, the Vikings are a weird team. They start off bad. They get hot with Cousins. Cousins get hurt. Dobbs has some plays. I mean, and then they looked absolutely dreadful against the Bears. So, but it will be Justin Jefferson returning. And the Chargers are just they're a huge mess. So it's actually looking now. The next two are probably the most manageable of the five games remaining. What do we make of the rest of the schedule?
I was thinking about it. I've developed a master plan. This is what should happen here, I think. The Raiders, they're all in for these two games to try and win these two games, your home games against teams you can and maybe should beat. Kind of show, again, you know, how much this team plays for Antonio Pierce. Offense is, you know, maybe he scores 21 points. Maybe they get lucky there. And defense keeps seeing, making some plays. So you show, like, that there is some progress. You'd be doing these two games. It'd be 4-2 under Pierce. The two losses are against really good teams. But at that point, you won two games, we're all in, and you're done. And then you tank. The last extra games, you're like, Max Crosby, we love you. You're not playing anymore. All the young guy, Byron Young, you're in. We got to see what you can do. You haven't played in freaking 2 months.
Zamir White time?
Zamir White. We got to see if you actually can play in the NFL. So, Josh Jacobs, you're taking a little break. You know what I mean? So, at that point, if you're Mark Davis, I think you can't decide. You got to decide early. Decide early. Like, you know what? Pierce is my guy. I need to see the last three games. I've seen enough. These first six. Let's think big picture. Let's get these guys who are hurt some rest. Let's get the young guys a chance to play. And let's also improve our draft stock. If we lose the last three games and go 7-10, that's actually probably better. You actually have a better chance of getting a quarterback in the draft next year. So that's my plan. You win, you got to win these two, and then you're done.
Do you wake up on Christmas morning and you just say the hell with it? We're not doing anything today. We're going to go out there and I'm going to send my team out there to play on Christmas morning, Christmas Day, big audience, you know, only NFL game in town, and you don't show up. Just shit the bed on Christmas morning.
No, you show up. I mean, if Byron Young has like 5 sacks and you win, that's great. Or Trey Tucker plays he's playing the whole game. I mean, I need to see these linebackers. Luke Mackerson, you're my guy. So just every young guy in the roster gets a chance to play for these last few weeks, and that's how you're going to be evaluated for next year. You're going to have a chance to make this roster next year. You're going to have a role. If you can't show me anything in these 3 games, then I probably won't have a lot of faith in you. Like, I mean, I think we give guys like a whole year pass and learning curve, but there's enough of a learning curve right now where guys should be able to come in, you can tell if they can play at this level. Like, I got to see like, a lot of guys in this roster who I have no idea. I mean, Chris Smith, you know, because Chris, have we seen Chris Smith at all this year? So, I mean, again, this is a chance to get some real tape on these guys. And I don't need to see, you know, I know what these other guys can do. I mean, you know, so I don't need to see any close losses to the Chiefs on Christmas. I mean, that's not going to do anything for our win against the Colts. It's not going to do me anything if I'm looking at the future of this franchise.
Are you going to activate Ted's guy, Cole Fotheringham? Is he coming up from the practice squad?
He is going to be a key red zone guy for me. He'll be my number one target in the red zone.
You got to unleash Fotheringham on Christmas Day. Yes. You know, that's the Fotheringham game right there.
There you go.
I think they could beat the Vikings and the Chargers. It's weird because they need to keep Joshua Dobbs away from the team. Like, the more he gets to know his teammates, the worse he gets. Like, the same thing happened in Arizona and now with the Vikings. They just need to, like don't even let him practice. And then keep him in a hotel away from the team until game day. You just bring him in and then he plays good, but it's already too late. He already knows his teammates, so he's playing a lot worse. And yeah, it's a winnable game. Chargers a little bit more difficult. They weirdly play good against the good teams, and they play the same against the bad teams. So you have that. And yeah, the Chiefs, Colts, and Broncos will be difficult.
So Dobbs is a lot like Jimmy Garoppolo. The best version of Jimmy Garoppolo ever was the Garoppolo that didn't know Kyle Shanahan's offense and just kind of went out there and just winged it. So I guess Dobbs, don't teach him too much of the offense, and the Vikings will be in good shape. But all right, as we go down the stretch, what players have the most on the line this year? I mean, you know, Aiden O'Connell is certainly been handed this opportunity to prove, am I the guy? Am I not the guy? I mean, he's going, assuming he's healthy and good to go for the rest of the 5 games. I mean, that's a nice long, you know, sample size that we're going to get to see. And I think really be able to know, like, is he just a guy or is he a guy with potential? But who else do we, besides him, who else do we look at that has kind of the most on the line the last 5 games?
Obviously he's still a rookie, but I think Tyree Wilson, I'd love to see a little more progress. I'd love to see a little, I know they haven't used him like up and down the line of scrimmage like they plan to, because he hasn't really locked down his outside role yet. But I think he's a guy who the coaches are saying the right things. He's working hard and yada, yada, yada. But for a first-round guy who's supposed to have like a top 10 pick with a serious impact, and he hasn't, I like to see some flashes. I haven't seen any flashes. So here's one for you. I'll also throw in Davante Adams. I want to see more of Davante Adams. And this is going to sound weird, but I just think if you're him, he's still complaining about being frustrated, being confused, but he's not getting enough touches late in the game. So does he want to be here long term? I mean, he has obviously has a new coach, and they believe in AP and yada, yada, yada. But he got 5 games to make him happy. Like, he'll be a guy who'll get the balls he wants and you're competitive, or else you can say, you know what, maybe this wasn't a great move. Maybe I do want to go join Aaron Rodgers in New York. So I think that trade thing is looming, because obviously you can get something for him, and he's definitely a top player. So does he want to be here long term? And if he does, can you use him in a way where you can take advantage of his skill set and get some big numbers out of him? Because they haven't this year, regardless of who the coordinator is or the quarterback. So that's, I want to see more production for him, you know, for Devontae. I'm sure he wants to see it as well.
I mean, what do you think is the best move with Adams? I mean, I said earlier in the season that, I mean, I think, you know, this team is facing a reset. They're going to be, you know, reset, reload, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it in some degree. If you can get a first round pick for Davante Adams, I think you do it in the offseason, which I would imagine you should still be able to. I mean, I know he's going to be 31 on Christmas Eve, so, but he's still obviously a productive receiver. You know, I mean, even with a down season, he's going to be over 1,000 yards. The touchdowns are down. He only has four, but do you feel like he should be a guy that you just go ahead and say you're going to commit to long-term, knowing that the salaries, the way his contract's structured, I mean, the salaries are going to get pretty huge. Obviously, they can, you know, redo those and whatnot and kind of push money down the line. But what do you think is the best move for Davante Adams? I mean, I personally think, I mean, he's a great player. Love having him here. But for where their organization is at, it probably makes the most sense to trade him.
Yeah, I mean, for first-round pick, maybe. I'm not sure you get a first-round pick because they won't have a lot of leverage. Like, teams will know at that point they're going to try to get rid of him. So maybe would you do it for a second-round pick? That's where it kind of gets dicey. Like, he definitely is an elite player and a guy who this team has shown to have that there's a talented core where you can win some games and you can maybe – all you need is, like, an impact – you know, we keep saying this every year – an impact rookie draft class and some impact free agency signings. And maybe you can make a run. Look at these teams in the NFL this year. You got teams who are – mentioned the Colts. Teams that are kind of have jumped the script a little bit and been better people than thought because they got guys who come in and made impacts. And the Raiders has not been the case. I mean, Spillane's been a really good find in the free agency, but otherwise, you know, in terms of the draft class, there hasn't been much in the last few years. So you have to look at, you know, who's your quarterback? That's the other question. Is it going to be O'Connell? Or are you going to draft a guy? Or if you, like, get a discount and get a guy like, you know, Kyler Murray or Justin Fields, then maybe you think you are closer than a total rebuild. Maybe you think Kyler Murray and, you know, Davante Adams can get you there quicker than not. So there's a lot of questions you have to answer before you decide on Davante, but I like to see him at least, you know, like I said, reestablish himself as the guy, because he's definitely, like he said, been frustrated this year, and you have five games to make him happy and see what you want to do with him long term.
I think I would be okay with either move, but you would have to get good value for him in a trade. I think, yeah, first round pick, you probably would do it, especially in this year's draft when it's considered a really good draft class. Second round pick is when it gets dicey. I think, you know, if it's a second round pick, you would want a package of picks to go along with it. And as far as players that have a lot to riding on these last few games, Hunter Renfrow too. I mean, you know, he's been more productive. They've gotten him the ball, but they can move on and save some money by cutting him next year. You know, do they want to keep him around for another year? Is he going to be worth it? And, you know, if you are going in a total rebuild, maybe not. And I think Trayvon Morig, he's played a lot better this year. And, you know, next year will be the final year of his contract. So he does have some time, but he I think, you know, finishing the season strong and then going into next season, he's going to be trying to work on building a case for a nice extension.
Who would you guys extend first? Would you extend Merrick first or Nate Hobbs?
Nate Hobbs. Yeah, I mean, I think Hobbs is playing at, he plays at a high level. I think he's better inside, but you know, you could put him outside and he still plays well too. And he's just one of the better slot corners in the league. Borg still has he's playing better, but he still has a lot more to prove, I think.
One thing I'll say on Adams, I want, you know, if you do trade him, you did something similar to what the Panthers did, where it's you're moving up to get a quarterback and you're including him in that to, you know, to kind of reduce how much draft capital you have to give up. You know, again, like I don't think that has worked out well for the Panthers because you got your quarterback and then you don't have anybody for him to throw to. So that's the other part of it, is that if you are going to make a move to a rookie quarterback, having Adams around is certainly a nice weapon for him to have. I don't know, we'll see. But that's one thing to consider too, is does he become part of a deal and move up, because of where they're at. If they win these next two games, and we're talking about maybe a 7-10 team, they're obviously going to have to probably look at trading up if they want to grab one of the top quarterbacks in the draft. They're not going to get either of the top two, but they might have to be aggressive if they want to make some moves.
If it's not for Caleb Williams or Drake May, I wouldn't make that trade. I mean, the second class of quarterback, there's some space between the top two and the rest of the class. So if it's not for the top two, I wouldn't do that.
Let's take a few questions here before we get out of here and enjoy the rest of the bye. We got from Dunkface33. Do you think the Raiders draft a QB or ride with AOC for one more year and address other team needs first?
Well, it all depends on the coaches, obviously, I think. And again, I think AOC has shown, we call it AOC, I'm not calling it O'Connell. O'Connell has shown that he's an NFL quarterback. I think he's shown that. I'm not sure he's shown he's a starting NFL quarterback, but, and that'd be a question for the new coach. But I think either way, you got to bring in a quarterback. You got to draft someone and develop him or bring another veteran guy in to compete with Aiden. But yeah, I think, I don't think Aiden's shown enough where you say he's the guy. Let's go with him and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if he throws for over 300 yards, three touchdowns per game, no interceptions for the rest of the season, then you wouldn't draft a quarterback.
But that's it. That's your bar. Yeah. He's got 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns, and no interceptions. He's the guy.
Yeah, that's the bar.
This reminds me of Ted's best case scenario for the season. The best case scenario is they win every game and they go to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. All right, so 1,500 yards, 15 touchdowns, no picks, and then Aiden O'Connell is the guy.
Yeah. No, but I mean, he's been impressed. I mean, he's shown high-level accuracy. He's shown that he can handle this offense and all the checks and stuff at the line, which is pretty difficult in this system. But he's shown he could be at least a high level backup, but you haven't seen the breakout game where he plays at a high level throughout the entire game. And he needs to do that for a majority of the last games of the season. If, you know, you even have an inkling of deciding that he might be the guy or not, but if he's playing at the same level throughout, then, you know, you're definitely looking for a quarterback next season.
I mean, I think the one thing we can say about him is that there's always going to be a ceiling on him because he's not one of those guys that's going to be able to do a ton to create out of the pocket. He's not a guy that's going to be able to elude pass rushers and like scramble for 25 yards. It doesn't seem to be, you know, he's not that kind of an athlete. And so there's always going to be some kind of a ceiling on him. You know, if you can have a guy that can be decent for you on a rookie contract, maybe, but you know, I would think they do need some kind of an upgrade. But if he's a guy that starts for you for the next couple of years and you see how he develops, that's fine too. But you know, they're gonna, at some point, you want somebody a little more dynamic, I would think. All right, next question here from Jesse Castle. He says, do we see any possibility that the coaching staff is able to revamp the offense noticeably, or should we face the fact that through 11 weeks, this offense is pretty much at a ceiling? What changes do you guys think can be made, if any? It's an offense that has only exceeded 21 points once, and that was against the New York Giants.
That's crazy. I think we've seen flashes with Bo Hardigree. They have been more aggressive at times. I think we've seen, I mentioned outside zone running. There have been some tweaks to the playbook. I think that would have been good. But overall, I mean, just definitely not the not the production you want. Definitely the points show it's all about. Still have problems in the red zone. I think we see Devontae Adams, how, you know, like we mentioned in that last game, he was like, you know, he was the guy early on, a lot of quick passes, and they took that away, and they were kind of like, okay, we're kind of done. So I think you got to be able to exploit him throughout the game. And they have enough tools. So they have, like, you know, they got Adams, they got Jacobs, they got Michael Mayer's played pretty well. Toby Myers has been great. Renfro's kind of had a little resurgence. So there should be enough tools in this offense, despite the O-line not being great or just, you know, regressing. You got to score some more points. So I think that will be, we'll see what they can do. And again, these last two teams were pretty tough. So we'll have more of an idea going forward. But we got to see improvement. We got to see some big plays and some more points the rest of the way.
I think they already made some nice changes in this offense, like the zone runs. They found a way to get Devontae Adams the ball, even though defenses are still paying a lot of attention to him, obviously. And they're playing with a rookie quarterback. And they played three, you know, arguably top five defenses in the Jets, the Dolphins, who are really starting to play a lot better now under Vic Fangio, and the Chiefs. So, you know, those are elite type of defenses that they flashed against. So we'll see how they do. The Vikings have a tough defense too, but we'll see how they play the rest of the way. I mean, Colts might be the only defense that might not be, that might be a below average defense, but the Broncos have been playing really good ever since they had that, you know, 70 burger put on them, but they're going to play the Chiefs again. You know, the Chargers aren't that good of a defense. So we'll see how they play the rest of the way, but they did play some really high level defenses.
Yeah. I mean, it looked for a few minutes against the Chiefs like, wow, this offense has suddenly come alive. And then they got stagnant. And that leads into this question here from AK and Miller, who wants to know, Ted, was there any obvious lack of countering Kansas City's defensive adjustments? Likewise, for our defense, did Kansas City make offensive adjustments that we didn't counter?
for the Raiders defense, there were so many coverage busts. You know, they said they were working on crossing routes throughout the week, but they just had so many mental mistakes. And I don't think it's the coach's job, or it's not like he's calling these plays to get busted. I think players just made mental mistakes, and it led to some big plays for the Chiefs. And they just kept on hitting the Raiders with bubble screens, and they couldn't come up and defend those. So I think a possible adjustment was just playing a little bit more tight coverage and forcing the Chiefs receivers to beat you down a field, which they've had trouble doing. And the Raiders never really did that. So that's a possible adjustment they could have made. Offensively, they couldn't sustain drives, and the Chiefs defense is really good at taking number one receivers away. Like we talked about, they took away Devontae Adams. They just got a lot of pressure on O'Connell, and it's just tough to play quarterback when you're getting that much pressure. So I don't know what adjustment they could have made offensively when you just can't block the other team's defensive line.
Final question. Got a couple of them on the same topic, so we'll hit them from Dat Raider and from Drunk Rally Monkey. They want to know, are the rumors true about Mark Davis leaning toward John Gruden to come back, or is it BS? Vic and I have long talked that I said from the minute Josh McDaniels was hired that, when he's eventually fired, Mark Davis will find a way to bring back John Gruden. Nothing in the Mark Davis, John Gruden relationship would stun me. I don't know that the timing is right with the lawsuit, and there's talk, maybe does he drop the lawsuit to come back? I don't know, but nothing would stun me. But he did tell Tashaun that for the first time ever, he's going into a head coach hiring without somebody specific in mind. So he at least outwardly is acting like it's not just a matter of him going back to Gruden. Wouldn't stun me.
Yeah, I would never rule it out, but I think it's probably not practical. But again, the Raiders aren't very practical. But I think at this point, it's clear what Mark's list is. You got to determine if AP's the guy. I think part of that is not clouding the whole Bisaccia thing. Not let that cloud his judgment, because obviously he may have some thoughts about what happened the first time with Bisaccia. Maybe he should have kept him on, maybe he shouldn't have. And different guys, but it's kind of a similar dynamic where players are playing for interim guy. And then you have to realize, is that best for us long term? And there's some questions about AP in terms of the game management, and that'll come with experience. So those are things that Mark has to figure out. And once you figure that out, then, like you mentioned earlier, is it a rebuild? Or are we kind of still tweaking? And then who can I bring in? Who can the Jim Harbaugh guy on their list? I mean, I think obviously his success in Michigan recently, now maybe not, but there's a lot of options. I think there's still an attractive job despite all the swings and misses over the years, I think. And so, but yeah, I can't imagine John Gruden is number one on Mark's list, but I'm sure he's on there somewhere. I'm sure, I'm sure down at the bottom. I mean, scribbled a little scribbling. There's probably Mark Davis and John Gruden, little heart sign somewhere down there.
You may dispute how the emails came out, or you might be angry about how the emails came out, but the fact is those emails did come out, and they did exist. And how can you hire? You fired him because of those emails.
Well, they didn't fire him. He resigned. They forced him to resign. And that was part of the problem. Mark wouldn't, the NFL wanted him to fire him and make a move earlier, and he didn't. So that kind of forced the issue. So that's a key thing, that Mark never fired the guy. So I think it had to be an apology. There's a lot of things you can do. I'm sure that PR companies make millions of dollars, this kind of stuff. There's a way you can probably rebrand John at some point if you had to. And I think, NFL, who are we kidding? If you win, then everything else is kind of forgotten. So,
we're acting like this guy had an amazing run as the Raiders coach, and you have to do what it takes to bring him back. But there's, I think he was a good coach as far as a play caller and that kind of thing. But when you look at the overall mess and the personnel mistakes, it was not a good tenure. So, are you that desperate to bring him back?
Do you think they're on the right track, though? Do you think when all this went down, obviously it was a really awful month for him and the Ruggs thing, but do you think they were on the right track at that point? Were they ascending under John Gruden at that point?
The way that he called plays, and as an on-field coach, I think he was, he was a difference maker at that part. But I think, all the personnel decisions just kind of negate all that. So, if you do bring him back, are you going to give him the full power and let him do all the things he did the first time around or second time around.
Would it be like somewhat of a money saving move? Is there a way to like say like, hey, well, we already paid you that settlement, so like let's kind of work that settlement into your salary because now I got this settlement that I got to pay Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. So it's like, hey, can we just, you know, I kind of already paid you for some of these years, so let's bring it back. I don't know, but the biggest thing to me that I think needs to happen in this hiring is, you need somebody to walk in when you're talking to them. You need an honest appraisal from them of your roster, because Ziegler and McDaniels lied. They did not give an honest appraisal. There's a reason that Mark Davis got up there at the introductory presser and said, this is not a rebuild, because that's the conversations obviously that those three must have had. And then pretty quickly, you know, a few months later, they obviously decided it was a rebuild. And even though they signed all these guys to an extension, I do not think that there was ever a honest, clear appraisal of the roster, which like that's what needs to happen if you're coming to taking over. Like Mark needs to be able to kind of be able to talk to these guys to get a real answer. Because if a coach and a GM candidate come in and tell you what you want to hear, oh, we're close, we just need to do this, that, and it's bullshit, then who does that help? So that's to me the biggest thing I think needs to happen in this hire, that you need to make sure whoever comes in that you are all on the same page from the get-go. Because if you're going to rebuild, you got to start it right away. Don't try to like say, oh, we're gonna half-ass it. And that's what Ziegler and McDaniels did. Is they went half in, half out, and that's what I think set this team back.
I mean, it's probably a little easier this time around, you know, when you don't have a quarterback in place to just say you need a rebuild. But I mean, I guess there is still that temptation that, you know, this might be a team that could be a quick turnaround when you have, you know, Davante Adams and some weapons on it, on this team, and Max Crosby. But it's just a little easier to just, I think most would lean towards a rebuild when you don't have a franchise quarterback.
Don't have a franchise quarterback. Your running back's not under contract. You're top wide receiver is 31 and coming off a frustrating season. I think the signs would point toward much more of a rebuild than anybody thinking they come in here and add a player or two and bring in some great scheme and suddenly have you contending with the Chiefs.
Let me ask you this then. This is a good follow-up. So if it is a rebuild and you are, that's what Mark Davis here at some point decides, does that help the case for bringing back AP? Is that like, is he the kind of coach you can grow other job with a young team? Like, he's a guy, if there's not like a rush to win right now, he can learn the things he's not good at, like the game management and all that stuff, and get some experience. So, and he can develop that old Raiders culture that you want, whatever. And does that help his case if you are going to rebuild? Like, you know, this guy didn't have experience, but we like so many things about him that this will be our guy going forward.
Yeah, he could be that culture setter. And, you know, generally, I think one of the advantages you have when you promote an interim is like, yeah, you saw with McDaniels, I mean, they gave him a 6-year, $75 million contract because you're bringing him in. Generally, when you promote an interim, you know, you're talking about a guy who you're not going to have to hand a 6-year contract worth, you know, that kind of money. So you might be in a better position to say, okay, like let's give you a 3-year deal and let's see how you grow as we try to grow this team. And, you know, and if you and the team grow together, then we've got a partnership for years to come. But if not, then, you know, we can pivot and we haven't really set ourselves back like they did with the McDaniels hire.
I still think you got to swing for the fences, you know, swing for some of the big names.
Ted's just writing checks, man. Just writing checks.
who are the big names?
Harbaugh, Mike McDonald, Ben Mike Johnson.
McDonald, Mike McDonald's a big name?
Guarantee you he's going to be one of the hottest coaching candidates this offseason with Ben Johnson. So I don't think you just hand him the job without looking
Ben
around.
Ben Johnson's a big name? Ben Johnson?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be the hottest hire.
I'm not saying he's hot. I'm sure he's hot, but is that a guy you really are like, oh, he's going to be great? I'm positive of Ben Johnson. Let me down with the guys who can turn us around. I mean, you're still, it's a big risk. I mean, these guys don't have long track records of success. I mean, they're kind of hot right now, but I don't know. What do I know?
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. Like, you're a hot coordinator, even if you don't have head coaching experience. Those are the hot name type of guys. So,
what about Bill Belichick?
No,
why not?
The Patriots way? I don't know if you can.
I mean, but you now know. You get, now
and
you
that is the actual now. Patriots way.
Yeah, the real guy.
You know, you don't have the clone. All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. But that's going to wrap up this episode of State of the Nation. We'll be back. We hope everybody enjoys the bye week. Have a nice weekend out there. We'll be back next week to get you ready for the Vikings. And we hope that Josh Dobbs, for your sake, we hope he spends a lot of time bonding with his teammates, really getting to know them, really getting to know the playbook. And that'll set the Vikings back.
The Pastronaut. What a great nickname. All right, boys. Adios.
All right. Later, guys.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.